It's Thursday, and that means it's time for our weekly check-in with Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes. He's been going through Governor Snyder's proposed budget for the new fiscal year, and he's decided the governor has something going for him, something that President George Herbert Walker Bush once called the Big Mo. So, Daniel, why is the Big Mo going for Snyder?
Well, I think he's just trying to take advantage of the situation that he has with what's going on in the state economy, action and movement in Detroit. He's got his budgetary restructuring of the previous years has created a surplus that he can now, in an election year, kind of sprinkle around in some strategic areas, and he's doing that in education, higher education, a targeted tax cut. He's kind of standing up to the GOP caucus in the legislature and saying, I don't think a across-the-board income tax cut's the way to go, but maybe there are some other things that he can do. And, you know, this is an election year, and we have to recognize it for what it is. I mean, this governor always likes to talk about how he's apolitical, and in some ways I think he may be, but I don't know that the people around him are.
Right, right. Well, you actually make an interesting point in your column in the news today that you think this new Snyder budget isn't powered by the left or the right, but is kind of taking a third path?
Well, I think he's kind of, in a sense, thumbing his nose at both sides. You know, you're hearing Democrats already say, well, it's just a restoration of what was. It's not additional funding. You know, complain, complain, complain. You know, we always need more, more, more. And on the other hand, you have his Republicans in the legislature saying, you know, we just need a tax cut. Everything's got to be a tax cut. Meanwhile, the roads are falling apart. The bridges are a problem. We got all sorts of infrastructure issues here, and we clearly are lagging behind in our higher education spend. What I like about what he's doing is he's saying, okay, I'm going to give more to higher education, but I'm going to condition it on certain levels of performance from state institutions, and that's probably a good thing, too. But I think if you look at his agenda, it very much dovetails with things you're seeing come out of groups like the Business Leaders from Michigan, which is basically saying, look, as opposed to being Republican or Democrat, what we need to do is look at what other states are doing and what makes those states competitive and competing for jobs and investment. There's two things that I think are very critical there. One is higher education and being able to create people and produce people that can actually work in our economy. You know, this economy has 50, 60, 70,000 jobs on a rolling basis that are going unfilled because we're not producing the kind of people that can do those jobs.
Right.
And we're also not attracting people from outside the state who can do those jobs. So I think the argument the business people make is we have to do things that make us more attractive. And sometimes the things that they're pushing are offensive to either Republicans or to Democrats because they don't hew to the traditional political lines that both of them tend to push.
And this governor who says he's apolitical, although some may argue that right to work proved that perhaps not so much. But nonetheless, when you look at what he's doing, as you say, it supports the view of the traditional building blocks of Michigan's economy with get a high school diploma and get yourself an assembly job for life. These are well and truly buried.
Well, they ought to be. I mean, you know, we live in a different era. And what I see on our message boards at the DetroitNews.com is a lot of people, you know, as the phrase goes, fighting the last war. You know, we live in a different time. I mean, the car companies, for example, are dramatically different than anything anybody has remembered. Not only are they very profitable, very much technology-driven. One of the greatest consumers and utilizers of high technology of any industry in the world. This is a technologically driven economy. I don't think there's any question about it. And the kind of people that are prospering and getting jobs in this economy are prepared for those kinds of jobs. They don't just come out of school and say, hey, just hire me. They've got to be employable. We see the same thing in the city of Detroit. People will talk about, you know, there are no jobs. Well, even if there are jobs and you have a city where half of the population is illiterate, are they employable in 2014? I think a lot of people would say in a lot of businesses the answer is no.
I'm speaking with Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes as we kind of take a look at Governor Snyder's new budget and realizing the economy is giving the governor a re-election bump, as Daniel put it in his column. And you do agree Rick Snyder's first term and his re-election bid are very much helped by a recovery that was already happening when he took office. So he's reaping the rewards of auto bailouts and corporate restructuring?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we have to be honest here. You know, just as Jennifer Granholm got pummeled by the global financial meltdown and the recession, and I think she clearly did, and those weren't, she didn't cause those conditions. by the time Rick Snyder was elected and came to office, the economy was starting to gear up. The auto bailouts had already been done by the feds, essentially, and these companies were moving forward. So that went from being an active issue to being a historical debate. And that was already moving. Now, I don't want to overdraw this. I mean, there are certain things that were happening that have helped him. I don't think there's any question. But some of the financial restructuring that he was able to do at the state and his team was able to do is something that I would argue that the people that were there before them were not capable of doing. I mean, they're doing multi-year budgeting. They've gotten very aggressive in terms of trying to pay down certain liabilities. We see that in this proposed budget where he's proposing to put more into the teacher retirement fund so that the unfunded liabilities down the road are not as large. So whoever succeeds him in this office, whether it's in another year or in 5 years, is going to be in a better position because these guys are trying to pay down and be more financially, I think, responsible, as opposed to spending all the surplus or turning around and giving the whole surplus back to people in the form of an across-the-board income tax cut.
Which would be little dribs and drabs.
Right. Yeah. And in a lot of senses, that's not a lot of money to a lot of people. And but there are some very real issues and some real priorities, I think, that the state has to look at. What do we need to be doing? We don't need to be doing everything, but what do we need to be doing?
Well, let me just kind of pursue this a little. So, yes, we agree that the auto bailouts and the corporate restructuring has helped him. So I'm wondering your thoughts. Did the tax shift that he gave, that gave a break to small businesses and raised taxes on pensioners, did it really produce the jobs the governor promised? I mean, if you minused out the auto recovery jobs and the manufacturing rebound that goes with that recovery, what do things really look like?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think the short answer to that is probably not as much as a lot of people thought. But I do think that you have to recognize that our businesses are changing in a lot of ways. Productivity is enabling a lot of businesses to do as much, if not more, with fewer people. And that's, again, another reality that we live in. I think the other thing that was important there is, the larger businesses, like the auto companies, ended up paying more under this tax shift. Smaller businesses did get a break, and it's fair to ask the question that you're raising. But I would also come back to the other point is, and I've raised this many times with people, if the guy living next door to you has a public pension and you have a 401k, when you retire, you have to pay taxes on that money when you pull out the 401k, and he doesn't. Why is he special? And every time I've had this conversation with people who complain about this fact, they don't answer the question because they're not special. They're no more special than you and I. You know, and I think that's part of the argument that he's making is if you have a retirement fund and some people have to pay taxes on it, why should people who are drawing a public pension not also have to pay a Michigan income tax on it? And I think most people would say that's a fair question. I mean, the fact that they don't answer the question to me, I think it says a lot. You know, they change the subject. And I think when he makes that argument about that this is a question of fundamental fairness, I think that resonates with some people. It may not resonate with a guy that's getting his pension taxed.
Sure.
But it resonates with people who are getting their 401ks taxed when they start pulling money out.
Yeah.
And I think that's another point. I mean, you can ask that question, by the way, of where are the jobs in the context of a lot of things they've done. The business tax reform is a good example. Another one is right to work. Where are the jobs? I happen to think that this is a cumulative process, that over time you become more competitive. And it's a whole matrix of things that are happening. It is right to work. It's the tax burden. It's how vibrant is your business community. What's happening in the city of Detroit? Where are they in the restructuring and the bankruptcy? I think all that stuff tends to have a cumulative effect. So to sit there and say, well, we've got right to work. We don't have all these jobs. Where are the jobs? It didn't work. It's obviously a failure.
Give it time.
You got to give it time. And if you look at states down south that have reaped this benefit, it's been something that's been a multi-year and even a multi-decade process.
Finally, just a quick thought, if I could ask you, what did you not see in the budget, Daniel, you wish had been there?
Well, I think they need to get serious about roads, the issue of roads in Michigan. And we are in a very unique geographical situation, being surrounded by water like we are, and that those huge bodies of water have major effects on weather and freeze and thaw and all sorts of other things, which is one of the reasons we have a lot of the problems that we have. But I do think that the legislature needs to be realistic about what it is that needs to be done, and what kind of burdens they're putting on future legislatures and future governors by basically saying we're not going to do this and we're not going to raise any taxes to devote to reconstructing the roads. And again, I think the governor makes an argument that can resonate with both Republicans and Democrats, i.e., you know, it's going to cost a lot less if we do this now than it is if we essentially delay replacing the roof and then it starts leaking and we have to rebuild the whole inside of the house.
Well put. Daniel Howes, Detroit News business columnist, with our Thursday check-in. As always, thank you so much, Daniel.
Thank you.